Hey, Tillich, first, congratulations on being the starter. Why have you won this job? Why do you think you deserve this job?
As a player in the NFL, you're just trying to do your best to prepare every day you can. And when your opportunity is given, and you just got to be ready. I think that's a question for you guys to ask the coaches, because really it's out of my control.
That was Dolphins quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, adeptly sidestepping a reporter's question last week. But this Sunday, the rookie's going to try and sidestep Aaron Donald and the rest of the Rams' pass rush as he takes over the starting job in Miami for the first time. Today, ESPN's Dolphins reporter Cameron Wolf explains the shocking timing of this move, how former starter Ryan Fitzpatrick and the rest of the locker room reacted to the news, and whether Tua time can ever live up to the hype. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, October 27th. This is ESPN Daily. Cam, I've asked you here today because we're in the middle of this interesting inflection point in terms of this Miami Dolphins quarterback depth chart and the franchise in general. So I just want to set the table here. First off, would you mind walking us through exactly what has transpired over these last couple weeks in this Miami locker room?
Yeah, it's been surreal how things have turned so quickly.
Fitzpatrick wants it all. End zone shot, and it's caught for a touchdown by Devontae Parker.
The Dolphins are on a two-game winning streak, right? And we see our first glimpse of Tua, his first 2 minutes of action.
So with 2:27 left in the fourth quarter, and the Dolphins up 24-0, the Tua Tagovailoa era begins.
And everybody here that's a Dolphin fan is standing and clapping, including us.
Everybody is pumped because he hasn't played all season. He has an emotional moment on the field afterwards where he kind of remembers all his dreams have been realized.
Tua's first NFL action, the Dolphins' first shutout in 6 years. And the New York Jets go to 0-6.
And we think that he's going back to the bench, right? And we are wrong.
Breaking news, the Dolphins are naming Tua Tagovailoa starting QB.
Adam Schefter reports on that Tuesday that Ryan Fitzpatrick is no longer the starter. It is Tua time in Miami, and everybody's jaws, including mine, drops to the ground. And we scurry to find out details of how and why. From what I found out, it all started Monday night. The Dolphins coaches have a meeting every Monday night to sort of discuss the game and maybe lineup changes. So this week they had the meeting as normal and they came to the decision that it's Tua time. Brian Flores, Chris Greer, the GM, were all involved. Decision, it's an organizational decision, not just a coaching decision. And I guess their thought was they were going to wait. Tuesday was the players' day off. They were going to wait till Wednesday to tell the team. But they told the quarterbacks on Tuesday. They called Ryan Fitzpatrick. You know, he's been the veteran. They wanted to do him right. Ryan Flores called him, told him to come into the office on the off day, and he came in and he told him, hey, Fitz, we're going with Tua. And obviously Fitz wasn't happy, but he appreciated that Flores told him the news in person. He called Tua. Tua's pumped. You get the emotions of both sides, Fitz disappointment, Tua's excitement. And I think in the Dolphins and Flores' mind, they were going to give the guys the rest of the day off and they would tell the team on Wednesday. But of course, Schefter's good at his job, and he gets news of it before Flores can tell the team.
That's unfortunate, is that I didn't get a chance to address the team before this was out. It's not the way I or we want to do business. Unfortunately, that's kind of the way of the world right now. I'm not happy about that at all.
So that creates a whole new dynamic. You know, players are getting, you know, text messages from friends, IG notifications saying Tua's the guy. They're starting their own group chat talking about this. And ultimately, Flores has to apologize to the team Wednesday.
I'll address that to the team and really apologize to them that they had to find out through social media. I don't think that's fair to them.
I think this whole week has caused a stir for a team that's been rather quiet, you know, over the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season.
Yeah, it's not the first team that Adam Schefter has disrupted by being good at his job. But I'm curious in terms of that tentacle, the sort of consequences of news leaking out before the formal announcement comes. What were guys thinking? How surprising, how shocking was this for them?
So it definitely was a surprise. I think the biggest surprise was the timing, right? So we all knew it was going to be Tua time at some point. You draft a guy fifth overall, he's clearly going to be your franchise quarterback. Some people thought he was going to start week one. So it's, when would he start? And I think the surprise from the guys I talked to was because they were on a two-game winning streak. They had just blew out the 49ers and the Jets back-to-back by more than three touchdowns each. So that seems like the least likely time that you throw the rookie quarterback in there. And, you know, Brian Flores decides, hey, we're going to shake things up. So I think that was the surprise. It wasn't like they saw it coming. It wasn't like, you know, Tua's getting ramped up in practice, taking all these reps. That's not what had happened here. You know, Fitz was their guy, and they assumed so. I think once they got past that initial shock, they were excited for Tua because they think that this is the guy that's going to eventually lead them to a championship. And Fitz never was really going to be that guy. But I think one thing for us to watch is, you know, as we go forward, if they do struggle initially, what is that going to mean to the locker room? You know, I don't think there's an issue now because Brian Flores has a good stranglehold of it. And, you know, Tua is very popular in that locker room. But winning matters to these guys. So if you don't win, there obviously may be some second guessing going on. So that's the first thing I'm watching for over the coming weeks.
We're going to take a deep, deep dive into Tua. But in terms of Fitz, you wrote something about him in May that I want to read back to you for a second. You said, Fitzpatrick vows to be Tagovailoa's biggest cheerleader, but he won't hand him the starting job in 2020. So with that context in mind, how did Ryan Fitzpatrick process this decision?
Yeah, I think the Fitzpatrick reaction to this may be the most interesting to me. Fitzpatrick was obviously really emotional when we spoke to him on Wednesday after the decision.
I was shocked by it. You know, it definitely caught me off guard. You know, it was a hard thing for me to hear. My heart just hurt all day. Like it was heartbreaking for me. Tough thing for me to hear and to now have to deal with. But you know, I'm going to do my best with it.
And he essentially said, you know, three things that stood out to me. I was shocked, my heart was broken, and I felt like this was my team for the first time in a while, and it was taken away from me.
I've been benched all kinds of different ways, but this was kind of the first place other than Buffalo where I just felt like it was my team. I think that's a lot of the reason why my heart was so heavy yesterday, but that's the direction that the organization's going, and you know, I've just got to accept it.
And those three things to me didn't signal a person that was prepared to hand the mantle over to Tua. I think Fitz thought he was going to get a chance to lose this job. He thought it would happen when he had one of his Fitz tragic games. We all know what we're talking about.
The three
interception, the four interception days where you just scratch your head and say, what happened to the Fitz magic? We didn't get him this week. And I think he if that would have happened, I think he would have just tipped his head and say, you know what? That's the way it was supposed to go. But we see Fitz playing his best football. His seventh in the NFL in QBR. He's the unquestioned leader of this team. He's beloved. And, you know, this team is 3-3, and playoffs aren't out of the question for a team that was sort of a laughingstock last year. When there's a move that's made while you're winning that doesn't seem to immediately signal this gives us the best chance to win, there are going to be a lot of questions from the quarterback, from the players in the locker room. And I think that's sort of why we saw such an open and honest Fitz. And like you said, that sort of brings back those words where he does not want to give the job to Tua. He wanted it to be taken whether from Tua or from his play. And he felt like neither was done.
This profession is interesting in that, you know, I basically got fired yesterday, and then my day of work today consisted of me in Zoom meetings listening to the guy that fired me, and then, you know, locked in a spaced out room, you know, with my replacement for 4 hours today. So there aren't a whole lot of jobs that are like that.
what you said there, just give me a chance to lose this job. I mean, it's a perfect encapsulation of the roller coaster that is Ryan Fitzpatrick. But at this point, as you say, in the ride, they're on a high. I mean, 3-3 is 3-3, but they're just one game back from the division leader right now. They're in the playoff hunt. And so in terms of why now, why is this for Chris Greer, the GM, and Brian Flores, the coach, why is this the natural point to do this regime change?
Pablo, that's the big question, right? I think you would be hard-pressed to say that Tua gives them the best chance to win in Week 8. I've watched both quarterbacks throughout training camp. I've talked to players upon the team, and I'll just kind of say this clearly. Fitz is ahead of Tua in terms of play right now. I don't think that's questioned. You know, maybe the coaches might think that Tua gives them just as much because of his, you know, surprise factor. But from everything I've seen and heard, Fitz has a stronger command of the offense, and he's simply playing better than Tua has been in practice so far. So although Tua has improved, it's not like Tua has been outplaying Fitz. So I think you have to look at things and take a step back from an organizational view if you try to understand why now for the Dolphins. And sometimes what's best for the organization doesn't immediately mean what's best for the 2020 team for this particular week. So if we talk to Brian Flores, I think he's going to say, you know, we're doing every move that gives us a chance to win. We want to win. I think all that's true. But coaches often look at things from a week-to-week basis. And I think for when you have a franchise quarterback, I think sometimes the GM comes in, sometimes different people in the organization comes in, and they say, hey, we're going to have to see this guy at some point this year. And we want him to get his lumps, getting his experience this year, so that in 2021, he's ready to flow and he's not getting the rookie jitters then. So when's the best time to put him in? And I think you look at him getting 6 or 7 weeks to learn behind Fitz. I think you look at him getting his feet wet in the game before with 4 or 5 snaps. And I think you look at a situation where they may have felt that he's learned as much as he can or grown as much as he can as a backup on the bench. And now it's time to unleash him so he can grow on the field.
Fitz has been, he's been great. I don't know if there's anybody who's been more instrumental in trying to instill a culture, made an impact on Tua, but a lot of other players on this team that made this decision very tough. But at the end of the day, as a team, we felt like the best thing to do for our team now moving forward was to go with Tua.
What's the value, Cam, in the mind of a coach like Brian Flores? What's the value of a rookie quarterback like Tua getting those lumps and struggles and experience in now?
I think when you look at the NFL game, particularly in this year and this pandemic, there are very few Patrick Mahomes where the first time you come out there, you're going to be electric and everybody's going to think you're phenomenal. We're seeing it with Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert, right? These quarterbacks have had some early success, but we've seen flaws through them, like the Cincinnati Bengals have their offensive line issues and the Chargers have their issues where luck always seems to run against them. But I think that's a level of adversity that they're facing now that Tua hasn't faced yet. So I think that they want Tua to face those bundles. They want him to see Aaron Donald coming at him and see how he reacts. And I think for the Dolphins, they probably understood that they're not going to win the Super Bowl, whether that they admit it or not. They're not going to win the Super Bowl in 2020, whether it's Fitz or Tua. So they have to plan for when we're able and good enough to win the Super Bowl 2021 and beyond. Is Tua going to be developed enough to be the key piece of that?
Yeah, it's so fascinating because there are so many things that Brian Flores cannot say explicitly, but you're reading and reporting in between the lines because it's very impolite and dangerous to say what you just said. We're right. not going to win the Super Bowl this year. Like, that's right. heresy in pro sports to say we're yeah. not actually in championship contention.
Yeah. What you just said takes me back to when they hired Brian Flores in February of 2019. Their owner, Stephen Ross, and he's a guy who's always been a win now guy. And he said something that struck to me even this week and said that, you know, we're going to take a long-term view in this. We're going to have some pain. We're not trying to sneak into the playoffs anymore. We want to be a long-term Super Bowl contender. And we haven't done this the right way in a long time. Dolphins fans will know it hasn't been good here forever. So I think every move they've made has been on the premise of, we know we're going to have to wait to taste our fruits. And I think this may be another example of that, where if we want Tua to be successful in the long term, we may have to pull back of our fit success to allow Tua to grow now.
All right, Cam, after the break, I'm going to ask for a little bit more patience from you because I want to turn this focus to Tua himself, and I want to explore how and why the hopes of this franchise, this sad but promising franchise, are squarely on his shoulders.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Cam, Tua Tagovailoa was drafted 5th overall by Miami in April. And at that time, he was still recovering from a very serious hip injury. So what do we know about how his recovery went and how his skills progressed in camp and through these first several weeks of practice, given this health background?
Yeah. So, Pablo, let me take you back a little bit. After draft weekend, Tua called himself 100%, right? But he wasn't necessarily fully ready for NFL action then. So he stayed in Birmingham, Alabama, and rehabbed multiple times a week from May till end of June, part of July, rehabbing, doing virtual meetings from there. And he got to Miami in July, right before camp, and they deemed him fully 100% then, and they cleared him for full activity. So that's when we saw him in practice for the first time. And I remember seeing him in that first practice. There was a lot of buzz. What was he going to look like? Was he going to be able to move fluidly? And everything I saw showed me a guy that seemed healthy. I didn't see him favoring that hip in any respect at all. And now we're looking at him playing on November 1st. And that is 351 days since that devastating hip injury that he suffered at Alabama. And 2 weeks away from 1 year. And I think that 1 year mark is important because I think there were some people in the Dolphins organization that looked at that 1 year mark and said, hey, that's when we feel the most comfortable with him health-wise. And I think that plays a factor in why we're seeing Tua now. They feel like, although he may have been 100% in July, he's 100% mentally, physically, and comfort level with that hit now. And the next step will be obviously taking a hit, which he hasn't done yet. And once they cross that step, then I think they may be fully comfortable with where he is health-wise.
Yeah, the more you talk, you know, the contours of a plan, they become more obvious. It does seem like there's a timeline, there's a logic here. But in terms of just the eye test stuff, Cam, if we can just turn to like how he's actually looked in practice now from a skill set perspective, how has Tua been looking?
Yeah, so I think fans should probably know that us as reporters, me, we don't get to see full practices during the regular season. So we go out there, we see 20, 30 minutes of practice. But the last time I did see Tua in full frame was during training camp. And I'll put this, you know, pretty point blank. Fitz looked like the best Dolphins quarterback. And there was little question in my mind then. Mm. Now, I didn't take that to be a negative on Tua. He was seeing his first real football action since that injury. You could tell he was a little, you know, slow in trying to get a grasp of the NFL game. But I did see highlights. And I think there was one practice that stood out to me that sort of showed me the glimpse of what Tua could be. He had been having a lot of up and down days where Fitz was, you know, clearly the leader. And he was trying to battle with Josh Rosen for that number two spot. And this day, he was absolutely brilliant. He was rolling out of the pocket. He was throwing deep balls to Devontae Parker, to Preston Williams. And I walked away from that practice saying that if he can bottle that version of himself and put it into game 4 for 16 games, this guy is going to be everything that Dolphins fans think he's going to be. And Dolphins fans think he's going to be the second coming of Dan Marino.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, the pressure on him is so out of this world. And yeah, he is like the next Marino, the next D Wade, the next fill in the blank Miami superstar here. But what does a Tua Tagovailoa in the dreams of his employers resemble?
So you always get the comparison thing. Who does he look most like? And, you know, we've heard some of these comparisons before: Russell Wilson, Drew Brees. And I am a little careful on giving these lofty comparisons because Russell Wilson and Drew Brees are both Hall of Famers, probably top five quarterbacks of this era. So, I mean, if Tua ends up being them, then congrats. You know, you have just hit the jackpot. But I do think in best case scenario, you look at, to me, more Russell Wilson than Drew Brees, simply because if he gets his health back and he feels fully comfortable, he has a mobility there that I think allows him sort of the escapability that Russell Wilson has. And what makes Tua great also can get him in trouble. He's been injury prone because he too often holds on to the ball. But I think when he's at his best, he's a very timing-based passer. He's, you know, accurate, one of the most accurate passers that we've seen in the college football game ever. And I think that'll translate. And he can make every single throw, whether it's a deep bomb, whether it's the post, whether it's the slant. And he has a really strong knack of defenses and exactly where he's supposed to throw the ball when. And that's something that you rarely see with young quarterbacks.
And so where does he need to improve exactly, do you think?
I think the biggest thing for him now is twofold. One, he has to get a better grip of the offense, because at this point, Chan Gailey's offense is structured more for Fitz, because Fitz has been in it for 5 years in different teams, whether it be Buffalo or New York Jets. Tua doesn't have 100% grasp of that offense yet. And that's something that's been clear from players I've talked to in practice. You know, there are times where, you know, he hasn't looked fully comfortable yet. Secondly, and I just mentioned this a little earlier, I think he has to focus on, in the NFL, there are often plays where you just have to give it up and say that the play's not there. I think in college, he was doing a lot of hero stuff, and he can get away with that because he was one of the best athletes on the field. You're not going to have time to get to your third and fourth progressions a lot of times in the NFL. So I think for me, those are the two biggest things that he needs to work on. And I think we're going to see that early on in the season when he gets to play.
One of the things that Fitzpatrick was so great at was connecting with his teammates, being this leader in a way that kind of defied cliche. For Tua, obviously, he's so young, he's just starting. But how are teammates responding to him and his presence in the locker room?
It was really easy for me to see how Tua could have, you know, rubbed some people the wrong way, because he came in, when he got drafted, he was immediately the most popular and well-known dude on the team. And he hadn't played a single snap yet. This is a dude who had a documentary on National Fox TV on the day before the regular season started, before he played a snap. So I was curious how his teammates would react to him. And the things that I've heard from teammates about him is humble, you know, willing to put others above himself. And he never makes it feel like he's the star. And that's hard to do for a guy whose buzz sort of outshadows himself. He's hardworking. He's humble, despite having this level of star power. And although he doesn't have the chemistry that Fitz has and the leadership levels that Fitz have, I think people think that he can grow into it and demand the team himself.
So outside the locker room now, give me a sense in Miami, like, what are they anticipating? How big is Tua and how big is his potential as a star there?
This is something I've talked to people in the city, across sports figures. I talked to Dwayne Wade about this. In May, I talked to Warren Moon and Ricky Williams. He has a chance to be the Dolphins' biggest star since Dan Marino. And it's pretty clear. And I don't think there's any doubt that if he lives up to his potential, he will be the face of South Florida sports, no matter what happens with the Miami Heat, definitely the Miami Marlins, Miami Hurricane. I'll kind of recite something that Dwayne Wade told me in May. He said, "This is a football town, and the Dolphins haven't been, you know, good for a while, but if they get it right, if they get it with Tua, then this guy is going to be the unquestioned face and the leader with the Dolphins following." I've already seen him in commercials almost every week. There's sort of a level of buzz around him that's national that, you know, Miami Dolphins fans haven't seen in forever. And I think that if he plays well, the Dolphins become a team of the past, where everything we talk about them is Marino this, Marino that, and all of a sudden they're a team of the future. And now they're a team that people can actually talk about now. And that's something that Dolphins fans would love, because they haven't had that in 20 plus years.
It's a lot of pressure. And I just wonder, like, well, I don't wonder, actually. I'm going to warn you. Like, fans are not going to take the long view on this.
Oh, yeah. You know that. I mean, like, it's already a comparison league. I think back to 3 weeks ago, Justin Herbert had that phenomenal game. And everybody, the commentary the next day was, did the Dolphins make a mistake on Tua? And we're sort of in a hot take world where everything is sort of reactionary. So I just look at the Dolphins' schedule coming forward. They've got the Chargers in a couple weeks, Herbert versus Tua. Whoever has the better game that day is the better quarterback. Yep. And that team made the right decision. Then we get Joe Burrow versus Tua the next month. That game is going to be compared. But I think that the most important thing for Tua and this team to do is figure out how to not listen. I'd hope that he can tune it off. He can go zero dark 30, like LeBron says, at least for his first month. The first month, everything is going to be souped up to the next level. If he does that, then I think it will be super good for his growth because he won't be trying to one-up every single step that everybody feels like he needs to prove that he was the right choice.
Cam, well, thank you for looking into your crystal ball of hot takes and providing a cool and collected explanation of what the hell's happening in Miami.
Thanks, Pablo.
Coming up, a show called Hotboxing with Mike Tyson is exactly what you think it is, and so much that you think it's not.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Here's another story I want you to know. I just finished listening to my first episode of a show called Hotboxing with Mike Tyson. And to answer two questions immediately, yes, of course, Mike Tyson has a podcast. And yes, of course, he is hotboxing his studio, meaning he's smoking a lot of weed with pretty famous guests, many of whom cannot wait to get stoned with the guy that I'll call Hangover Tyson, the cartoon heavyweight champion who owns Tigers, plural, and loves to party. All of which makes it extremely jarring when this Mike Tyson, within the first 5 minutes of a given episode, shows up instead.
You know, sometimes it's hard to say to yourself, you know, I don't like myself, but I don't know how to change. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like myself for a long time because I did a lot of shit to people. That's just who I am. I'm an abused kid that abused people.
On this particular show, Tyson's guest was the usually unapologetic and loudly homophobic rapper Boosie Badass, who arrived proclaiming himself an Iron Mike superfan. But Tyson, with all the sincerity of a therapist, proceeds to conduct one of the most fascinating interrogations that I've ever seen.
Why do you say things about that might be a homosexual? Why do you say that about them? Do you feel the possibility that you're a homosexual and you, by disrespect them, you further yourself from being a homosexual or thinking you may like homosexuals?
Nah, I'm straight as an arrow. I'm just saying, you know.
If you're straight, why do you offend people?
Boosie tries to sort through his thoughts and explain himself further there, but even that basic fact alone, that evident desire to try and explain himself, that's what's so magical about having Mike Tyson as not just a therapist here, but as a public messenger of sensitivity around gay rights. Because make no mistake, we're a culture that loves to ignore messages so we can go straight to killing messengers. but it is a lot harder to kill this particular messenger. It's a lot harder to dismiss a guy with the message of toxic masculinity if that guy happens to be Mike Tyson, a patron saint of aspirational alpha males. You can't really call the baddest man on the planet a politically correct snowflake. And yet, it's clear also that Tyson didn't invite someone like Boosie to act out some viral gotcha interview. Tyson, at age 54 now, very clearly just feels this way. He not only knows the bullying theater of manhood to be a front, a fraud masking deep personal insecurities, he's actually and introspectively curious about his guest.
You know,
I'm just saying, hey, you know, I'm not judging you. Don't ever think I'm here judging you. I'm just trying to understand you.
Yeah.
You know, and I got some demons. You ain't in my world when it comes to demons.
Yeah.
Okay, but just tell me why.
Over the rest of the 45 minutes they spend together in that smoky studio, it becomes obvious that Tyson isn't seeking some bow to put on the end of his own personal story or anyone else's. And Boosie doesn't become some new champion of LGBT rights by the end of the episode. He doesn't have this miraculous character turn. But he does apologize at one point, and he does admit that he should probably be quiet more often than he is on these matters, as both his mother and Mike Tyson have now personally suggested. In fact, while he's sitting in front of Tyson, to his credit, Boosie mostly does just that. He stays quiet. Not because he has nothing to say, but because he's just received a message that he suddenly wants to hear. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.